You're listening to Back to Us Radio on the Back to Us Network.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Who have I become? Who have I become? Who have I become?
Who have I become? Who have I become? Who have I become?
Tight midnight, weighed up by the lamplight like a housewife. Can't sleep, can't sing, staring at the phone, still it won't ring, won't ring. Get back.
Good evening, Strong Stance listeners. Thank you so much for joining us again this month. As always, we have an amazing topic for you tonight. And so we're just going to jump right in here. You know, when it comes to referring to the larger gay or queer community, and I'm using air quotes here, most people and organizations have settled on the acronym LGBT, or lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. While each of these individuals are not identical, nor do they sometimes even share some of the same characteristics, they found themselves grouped together as one collective community. But why is that? And what are the benefits of the collective versus the individual, or rather the collective and the splintering off of one particular segment of that community? There's an ongoing debate as to whether transgender people really belong in the same category as the rest of the community. So tonight, we're going to discuss that. Does the T truly fit in the acronym and why, or is the T transitioning out of LGBT? Joining us tonight to discuss this issue are two special guests, the first of which is Percy Kramer. Percy is a graduate student at George Mason University working toward his master's in public policy, and he currently works at the new Casa Ruby Transitional House for Homeless LGBT Youth. Percy has previously worked on policy at the National Center for Transgender Equality and continues to participate in advocacy work for transgender people. Percy is also the newest facilitator for DCATS, and when he's not out and about, he's a fitness junkie and occasionally a Netflix couch potato. He currently lives in Washington, D.C., but is originally from Southern California. Percy, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, thanks for asking.
Absolutely. So I got to say, DCATS, as well as a couple of other organizations I mentioned there, DCATS, near and dear to my heart since I was a facilitator for about 4 or 5 years. How are you liking being in that role with that organization and those guys?
I like it. Yeah, it's really good. I really enjoy, you know, going to meetings and seeing, you know, a whole bunch of people that I can, you know, relate to. And so it's really good to be part of that group. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are coming up on Pride season. So I can imagine that, you know, it's probably not even the calm before the storm, but your storm is probably about to get even more crazy between Casa Ruby and DCATS and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that's going on. Yeah.
So I really want to thank you for joining us for this discussion, because it's a discussion that obviously I think that before we even dive into it, you know, we want to set some, not some ground rules, but some expectations, and that, you know, there's obviously a difference between sexual orientation and gender identity, right? The LG and the B are about, you know, who, you know, you are oriented to, whether that is in sexual attraction or emotional attraction. Whereas your gender identity is how you identify, right? So it's like one is almost external to you, whereas another is internal to you. I'm curious as to how you kind of define those two terms and the difference between them.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, you know, being transgender is how, you know, I see myself and how I essentially always seen myself, whereas my sexual identity was something that, you know, I didn't develop until, you know, I hit puberty and I was like, oh, that person looks interesting, or, you know, stuff like that. So for me, like, it's definitely like a concrete difference, in time and, you know, just in how all of that develops for me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that, that I want for everybody involved in this show, whether it be our listeners or folks on the call tonight, to understand is that the question isn't whether these two things are the same. The question in my mind is really, is there enough commonality to keep this community together? And I think that, you know, what's interesting is that most of the time when I ask folks onto the show to talk about an issue, I usually have had this conversation with them at length before then and basically say, you know what, we really should talk about this. And I think that one of the differences with today's show is that, you know, you and I have talked about this extremely briefly. And so I kind of know how you feel about it, but not exactly. And so I think that this conversation is going to be very interesting because I think that we'll get into a lot of details about how each of us feels about certain things and kind of how we see certain things. And so one of the things that I think is interesting and one of the reasons why I kind of brought this subject forward at this point in time was that obviously this is not a new discussion and we'll get into some of the previous debate and some of the things like that. But there was recently, I think that you've seen it, a blog post that came out from Metro in the UK called Why It's Time to Remove the T from LGBT. Did you get a chance to read that?
Yes, I did.
So what I found particularly interesting about this is that a lot of times when I hear someone say we should, and not all the time, but a lot of times when I hear someone say we really should remove the T from LGBT because it's not the same. Oftentimes, and maybe this is just my personal experience, oftentimes that has been from cisgender folks in the LG and B community, whereas this post was actually written by a trans man.
Right.
So like, what has been your experience when you hear people talk about, you know, it's really time or it doesn't make sense for the T to be part of LGBT? Is it normally kind of a split or do you mostly hear that from trans folks? You mostly hear it from cis folks. What does that look like from your experience?
So I've heard it more from trans folks. So one of the big things is that I've heard is, you know, trans people have sometimes been left behind. You know, there have been, you know, pieces of legislation that have gone through, something like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, where, you know, it includes LGB but not T. And you still have that split where, you know, the LGB community, it seems to be getting farther than the T community. It seems like the T trans people have been participating as part of the LGBT community but haven't gotten as far. And there's almost a sense that, you know, the gay, lesbian, and bisexual community haven't been fighting as hard for trans people as trans people have been fighting for them. And so there's almost a resentment I can sometimes see from, you know, the trans people where they're like, well, maybe we should separate and maybe we should, you know, push our issues on our own and we might get farther, we might win more, and it might be that, you know, people are more opposed to some LGB issues than they are to trans issues. But I see that point, but I also see the fact that the trans population is such a small community. And in a democracy like we have in the United States, it really comes down to numbers. And it's really hard to get, you know, our voices heard when there aren't that many of us. And a lot of people know and can conceptually understand what it means, you know, to love someone. And, you know, if a man wants to love another man, then they can see how, you know, that, you know, their thing, that's their business, and that's fine. And some people have come to accept that. But with, you know, being trans, a lot of times that's a harder concept for people to get their heads around and not really understanding how people can feel such a disconnect with, you know, their gender and their sex assigned at birth.
Yeah. Yeah. So to your first point, so from your experience, and I think that that's probably from the trans people that I've heard of, I've heard that as well, that it's almost like, look, enough is enough. If you don't want us here, then why would we want to be here? And from the cis people that I know that I feel like have been saying those kind of things, not all of them, but a lot of them, I feel like some of the reason why they're doing it is almost identical to the reason why trans people are doing it, but the opposite. It's almost like they're trying to draw a distinction between themselves and trans folks, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're not that bad, right? Like, as if we stain their reputation, we stain their ability to get acceptance, because people make that automatic jump, right?
Right.
If you accept these guys, then you also have to accept these guys. Now, mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. I totally understand that, and I see it particularly from the trans point of view of enough is enough. If you don't want us here, we don't want to be here, or maybe we could, you know, do more on our own. I do agree with you that when it's a numbers game, that's just not the way it works a lot of times. I think that what bothers me both about this article, this particular post about why it's time to remove the T from LGBT, and from cis folks wanting to draw the distinction is, you know, this person basically says that, you know, that many of the LGBT folks aren't really tolerant of the T, so you start to wonder why we insist on being included. Me personally, I don't think that's a good enough reason. Right. Just because you don't want me to be here does not mean that I automatically have to leave. Because for me, I get the reason why trans people would want to do that for self-preservation. Whereas I'm also saying, yeah, if you don't want us here, that doesn't mean we leave. That means we go, too bad. There's a place for us here. We are all stronger together. And instead of us leaving and trying to start our own thing or furthering our own thing alone, why not go, no, you guys have to start including us here, right? Like, instead of they're not including us, we need to leave, it's more like they're not including us, we need them to include us.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, with my transition, you know, I pretty much came from, you know, the lesbian community. And I know that a lot of times there was uncertainty from, you know, the lesbians on, you know, what does it actually mean to be trans? And was I ever actually part of their community if I had always felt, you know, a disconnect with, you know, who I was and my gender? And they didn't really understand what it meant to be trans. And I think that's almost an assumption that everyone has made, that the LGBT, you know, they know each other and they know their own issues, and we need to educate everyone else. But, you know, the LGBT community is good. There's no education. Nothing else needs to be done within, you know, our community. And I feel like that's one of the big problems that there's been, where there hasn't been education within the LGBT community and trans people going out and saying, you know, do you understand? Do you get it? Do you know what I mean? And LGBT people not really wanting to, you know, learn anything else or accept. And I feel that there's been that collision, and we need to do a better job of, you know, educating people within our own community.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that we also, you know, as a strong believer in self-care, we also have to know the right time and place and when we're just going to be shouting against a brick wall, right? Like, there are certain people that it doesn't matter how good we do at educating, they're just not going to hear you. And they're just not going to. And so for me personally, I try. And then if I realize, okay, this isn't doing this person, like, this person is not even hearing me, I'm not going to put myself in a position to feel like I'm being berated or like I'm not being understood and shouting against the wind. I'm just going to go and use my time more effectively in a place where it might help. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's similar to that whole, don't read the comments, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, you can't fight all these battles on the internet, because half the time people aren't listening on the internet. Right. And you never know whether someone is genuine or just a troll. And so I feel like that we run into that a lot in our real life as well. I think that, and I'd love to get your perspective on this. I think that the thing that bothers me the most is when we are told by people in the LGB community that either we'll get to your issues later, or, you know, you guys are slowing us down in whatever way that takes, in whatever way that phrasing happens. And one thing that I have actually heard verbatim said to my face was, well, just don't forget where you came from. Don't forget who fought for all the rights that you enjoy as a trans person. And that to me smacked of ignorance on the part of that person knowing their LGBT history. What upsets me so much is when LGB people that are turning, because not all of them are turning their backs on the trans people, but those that are, or that are putting them as, we'll get to your issues later, conveniently forget or maybe never learned that Stonewall was started by trans women. Like, this isn't something where you can tell me, don't forget where you came from and who fought for your rights. No, you should not forget that Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson were two trans women of color that were a huge part of Stonewall. That Stonewall was basically instigated and led by trans women, particularly trans women of color in our community, and that gave birth to the modern gay rights movement.
Right. I mean, that really, you know, upsets me, especially now where there have been so many trans women of color that have been killed, that, you know, are constantly being attacked. And that for me is kind of, you know, we can't wait. Like, there's, you know, we're dying. You know, there's people in our community that are, you know, getting killed. The poverty rates within the trans community are really high. It's really hard to get a job. There are, you know, it's just, yeah, amazingly frustrating where you can see, you know, different states getting protections for, you know, the LGB community when it comes to jobs or housing, but the trans community is not there. And that affects, you know, our life every day. So,
The poverty rate, the unemployment rate, you know, just in general is just so stark when it comparing sometimes night and day between the cis community as a whole and the trans community as a whole. But it's even, like you said, even greater numbers between the LGB and the T parts of the community. And what I'm afraid of is just like what you were saying, that there was this really great word that I read on one of these posts, was that my fear, and this wasn't me that said this, but someone posted, my fear is that once basically the LGB people get their rights, that the trans community will just be jettisoned off, right?
Yeah.
Like that it'll be like, okay, we're finished. And I think that the part of me that's afraid of that, like, I want to believe in the human, you know, in human nature and that want to do better. But the part of me that scares that is when you look at a lot of cis LGB people, because obviously, you know, if we have not made this clear, since they are separate, there are trans people that are gay and lesbian and bisexual. But for these cis LGB people, the thing that frightens me is particularly the white cis and LGB people have really made, like, marriage equality is our last bastion, right? It's it's the biggest thing in our community. Not from where I'm standing. Biggest thing in our community is the fact that in the first 8 weeks of this year, 8 trans women of color, or 8 trans women, 7 of which were, you know, trans women of color, were murdered in 8 weeks.
Right.
Right. And that our poverty rate's so high and our unemployment. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the fact that 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBT.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, marriage is great and it sets a great precedent for we're just like everybody else as far as quote unquote being normal, but it does not solve most people's problems. And so I don't know. When you hear people talk about marriage being so important, does it give you that fear, or do you just kind of have to roll your eyes and go, yet again, more education that we have to instill?
It does. So I have a little bit of hope in just the fact that when I was with NPTE, we were going around and doing interviews for pretty much a bunch of marriage equality groups, and a lot of them had expressed their view that, you know, the next battle to fight was for trans issues. I'm like, no, it's not the next battle. We need to be doing it now. But
right.
They weren't packing up shop and being like, okay, we won. Like, that's it. You know, time to go home. But it's still like, okay. Well, we're not done with our stuff yet. And that was still really frustrating. And like, well, the LGB community is still going to have issues, you know, once marriage equality passes, and there's still going to be discrimination because marriage equality, you know, has been achieved and it is legal, it doesn't mean that it's going to be accepted by everyone. You can't just stop there with the LGB community, but you also, you know, you can chew gum and walk at the same time. You can start at least, you know, start working on trans issues, especially when, you know, it's coming down to people being alive. And
right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I absolutely and totally agree. And I think that what, you know, I never like to draw parallels between the civil rights movement of the 60s and the LGBT movements of today in the last, you know, 40 years. But there was something that someone said to me once where they said that, you know, LGB people, cis LGB people telling T people, just hang on, we'll get to your issues next, sounds a whole lot like white women telling women of color during the women's rights movement, just hold on and we'll get to your issues next, and putting
right.
them at the back of the bus. When in reality, they're all women. We are all people, you know, as the LGBT community, we're all people in this together. And I think that, you know, beyond the fact that trans people were really kind of the main driving force behind the birth of the modern gay rights movement, beyond the fact that we oftentimes get lumped into the same community based on ill education by other people, right? Like,
yeah.
They're just like, I don't understand the difference. Sure, we can educate more. And the fact that we tend to have the same, I don't want to call them enemies, but for lack of a better term, we have the same enemies oftentimes. The thing that really makes me continue to say, look, I get that we're different, but the main similarity is that when someone is assaulted, when a queer person is walking down the street and they are assaulted, very often it's not because they're gay or because they're lesbian, because oftentimes you can't tell whether someone is gay or lesbian. In fact, you can't. You cannot tell whether someone is gay or lesbian just by looking at them. What you can tell is whether they're breaking gender norms, traditional gender norms. And trans people and certain people in the LGB community break those gender norms in the same ways. And so when we're talking about hate crimes legislation or protection, or when we're talking about bullies, you know, Laverne Cox wrote a couple of years ago, this same debate was happening, and Laverne Cox wrote a piece where the title was, "Bullies Don't Draw a Distinction, So Why Should We?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I see that, and I feel like people are saying, you know, well, the protections for, you know, the gay and lesbian community, they'll cover, you know, a lot of the trans issues, and it's just not going to be, you know, the name. And I feel like that's not necessarily true, but at the same time, I have read the Laverne Cox article, and I agree, you know, people are being attacked because, you know, some boy is walking like a sissy, or, you know, a girl that is wearing, you know, very masculine clothes. And I think that is true, that, you know, it's usually, you know, it's just the same people that hate us because they don't know anything and they don't understand the difference. But I believe Also, one of the things that's happened within the trans community is whether someone can pass or not, and how that affects, you know, people's lives, whether it's people's ability to get a job or, you know, just being able to walk down the street without being attacked. There's been, you can really see, you know, the class difference between, you know, trans people and those who can pass and those who can't. And a lot of times it has to do with how much money someone can put in to, you know, getting, you know, whatever they need to get done, or, you know, buying the right wig or getting the right makeup and being able to walk down the street without, you know, getting assaulted. So I also see that as one of the big issues that is, you know, happening now.
Yeah, and passing privilege is huge. I mean, first of all, I've said this before on previous shows. I hate that word, pass and passing, because passing is such a term that basically says that you're flying under the radar pretending to be someone you're not. And that's not what we're doing, right? You know, we are who we are. And so it's almost like being read in the community. But the phrase of passing privilege, it's so hard to rename that. So basically, for those listeners that aren't aware, passing privilege is something, God, the easiest way I guess I can describe it is just, it means that you can walk down the street and be read as who you are and not be questioned about whether or not you are really a man or a woman, or be seen as the gender that you want to be seen as. And passing privilege is huge. You're right. And I think that one of the things that you mentioned that's also so important was that, you know, you were saying something about, some people were saying that certain legislation does not cover trans people. I 100% agree. And I think that the issue is that what I'm saying is that it should. So like if hate crimes legislation covers sexual orientation, it also should cover, by natural extension, in my view, gender identity and expression, partially because we should be protecting all people, but also because of the fact that how do you know that someone is gay, right? And if you don't know and you just beat them up because they were acting effeminate as a man or masculine as a woman, that's less about you being gay and lesbian. That's more about your gender expression and possibly your gender identity. And so I think that I definitely don't want anybody to think that I'm saying, oh, the laws that we have for gay and lesbian people, they cover trans people as well. They absolutely don't. And I'm saying, I think that what we're both saying is they absolutely need to.
Yeah. 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 And so, I think,
go ahead.
Well, people don't realize that, you know, it doesn't cover everyone, and, you know, it isn't just a given. And if the law makes a distinction and some people are left unprotected, then, you know, it kind of leaves a lot of people screwed. And when, you know, you end up in court and they're saying, oh, no, I didn't mean that I was going after them because, you know, I thought that, you know, they were with another man. It was, you know, it's just that, I don't know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't get, you know, the right hate crime protections to cover, you know, a non-existent crime, quote unquote.
Right. Exactly. So while we're talking about this, I think that actually this is a great time to bring in our second guest. So our next guest is Christian Heck, and I'm so glad that he is able to join us. Christian was born in Thailand, grew up in Ohio, and has lived in D.C. in the D.C. metro area for the last 10 years. He's a bartender, was previously a performer with the D.C. Kings, and identifies as a transgender male. Now, Christian is here to share a story about an incident that happened last year. But before we get started with that, I want to announce a trigger warning that we will be talking about a physical assault. And so, Christian, I just want to thank you for joining us, and how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you've been through quite a week, and we will we'll definitely get into that in a minute. But I'd love it if you could kind of recap for our listeners and also for Percy, because I don't think that he is aware. But if you could recap for folks what happened last year in as much or as little detail as you feel comfortable with. Basically what happened.
Sure. It was my 30th birthday. I was working as a server bartender at Fridays, and I was going out. My friends surprised me. A bunch of straight identified females wanted to go out to D.C. and have fun. So we drove to D.C. We went to Chinatown, had a really nice dinner. Around, it was 8 o'clock, we were hanging out. And then I decided, hey, let's go to Adams Morgan to do karaoke. Adams Morgan is predominantly straight area. I don't really have any problems going anywhere that's not, a GLBT, a club or a gay bar. I can go to pretty much anywhere, And I also wanted to make my friends feel comfortable because I was the first trans person that they've ever met. So that's a new territory for them. But they were very accepting and, they were very good with pronouns and everything like that. So we were all about, going downtown. Like any other celebration, everybody's having fun, drinking and everything like that. So we leave around 1:30 a.m. and I stop at a McDonald's. I get something to eat. I give some guy homeless food. A homeless guy some food. I was like, hey, and they're like, come on, let's go. So we're rounding a corner, and we hear this yelling. We hear this screaming. And I hear a male voice, and I'm like, okay, this is D.C. People yell all the time.
Yes.
So I hear it, projecting towards the females of the group. And I hear, hey, sexy, yo, white girl, come over here, mama, stuff like that. Yeah. And I look over, and I see a couple of males leaning against a Camaro. And one of the females in the group, she just said, no, thanks, was polite, and it's not cool. And he just kept being persistent, and, he kept doing uninvited sexist statements. One of the statements, I believe, was you want to come over and sit on this, and I'm not talking about my Camaro.
Lovely.
I was more embarrassed for him as a male. I'm like, really? Is this how you pick up chicks? Because that's what I wanted to. So at that moment, I just felt like I needed to say something, and I don't know what just came over me. It just something in me triggered that I needed to say, hey, come on, leave the girls alone. We're just trying to go home. It's not cool. It's disrespectful. And then suddenly something triggered in him, and all his attention just focused on me. And suddenly it's he's just what the fuck did you say, faggot? I wasn't talking to you. And I'm whoa. All right. So now my brain's going, what do I do? Do I stand my ground? Do I run? Do I kiss? I don't know. I just freeze for a second. And he keeps going, and he's what the fuck are you? Are you a boy or are you a girl? I can't fucking tell. You're a shim. So now, all these trigger words are going in my head, and I'm boiling. And I'm okay, so he's ignorant. He doesn't understand. So I have to put that into play, perspective. Mind you, this feels hours in my head, and it's probably 2 seconds. So basically, I just yell at him, and I was you've got to be kidding me, right? And I'm trying to say things to make him stop and think. Hello, this is wrong. This is a human being speaking to another human being, regardless of gender, identity, or anything. You're talking to someone, and you're being absolutely rude. So he comes back, and he just starts running towards me because I had challenged him somehow in some way. And he's ran up to me. My friend jumped up. My friend Veronica jumped in front of me, I guess, as protection. But he came up to me about 5 inches and said, what the fuck did you say to me, fag? And he tries to reach for me, and she blocks it, and I'm like, I back up, but I don't walk away. I'm standing there, I'm staring at him, and I don't walk away because I felt like I needed to prove a point or educate. In that weird psychotic moment, I felt like I just needed to do something.
Yeah.
And all instinct told me to walk away, and I couldn't. I just froze. And in my head, I was like, this can't go on anymore. I you said earlier in Percy and the conversation, you know, and Eli, you said something that like every day, like trans people, especially recently, that people are dying. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of unreported cases mm-hmm. and people who don't speak up. And that's what made me, I guess, want to stand there is because I needed to speak up. I needed to say something right then and there. So, you know, the bickering and the conversations kept going, and he just kept going at me. Like, I don't know if it was my presence. You know, I looked very masculine, and so I don't know if he was just, I threatened his manhood or what was going on. Yeah. And I would just explain, like, why are you being, and I kind of got offensive. I just said, why are you being an ignorant piece of crap right now?
Yeah.
And so it continued, and apparently he yelled and said that I'm an educated man and I go to college, bitch. I don't know what the point of that sentence was, but so I was like, well, then act like it and prove that you're educated and walk away. I said, it's 2014 and you need to be part of the solution, not the problem. I got really, like, political and I, like, stood my ground. Mind you that I've also had been drinking, too. So I'm like, where is this coming from?
Adams Morgan politics at 1:30 in the morning.
Absolutely. It was justifiable right then and there. So, it was more just bickering back and forth. And then all of a sudden, somebody out of the blue, total bystander, starts filming this altercation, this fight.
Yeah.
And I literally stopped and turned and looked over and said, are you kidding me? Like, now you're filming a hate crime, basically. You're filming a fight. And you want to put it on the internet so that this issue can be just justified and that it's okay? That people can just walk up to people and start fighting and screaming at them and calling them faggots and queers and saying all this stuff, and it's going to be on the internet, and it's okay.
Yeah.
So I was heated on that point, too. So now I have so much going on, and trying to avoid this guy beating the shit out of me.
Right.
And he ends up getting around my friend and then, like, pounding on my face a couple times. Like, and I'm not fighting back. I was trying to get away from him. I have friends on one corner screaming, yelling. I have another friend on 911. One friend ran down the street, and then I have me and my friend and trying to block this guy, and he's pounding on her.
So at this point, he is punching both you and your friend.
Yes, he's hitting her, trying to get to me. He shoves her out of the way. He's about 6'2". I'm only 5'6". He's 6'2". So he's hitting her, a female, straight female, to get to me. And eventually, we get to a corner, and he hits me in my face, knocks my glasses off. I was wearing glasses at the time. And now I can't see because I'm nearsighted, so I can't see. I scream that, like, I'm blind. And he steps on my glasses, smashes them, kicks them, and says, that's what you fucking deserve, faggot. Okay. By that time, the altercation has ended because the police show up. His friends grab him, pull him to the side, and then the police show up.
So he didn't run off, right? Like when his friends grabbed him, they kept him there while the police were there. Is that correct?
Yes. He actually threw his friend off of him to continue to start coming towards me and hitting me. And then finally when like six police cars showed up is when he realized, oh, maybe I should walk away.
So that was a year ago, correct?
Yes, August 14th.
So let me ask you a question before we get to what's been going on in the last week.
Sure.
Do you think that he, I mean, if it's me looking at that situation, it looks like he kind of went after you for two different reasons. One, he didn't want you stepping in where he was trying to, quite honestly, disgustingly catcall. But do you feel like that part of the reason why he kept on and kept on, I mean, I feel like this is a dumb question since you said what he said so many times, but do you feel like he was doing that because of your appearance, because of that you were different, because you were breaking some kind of societal norm about what men or women are supposed to look like? Did you at all feel like that's why he was coming after you?
I think it's a combination of a couple things. The first aspect of it, I think, was because I was that at first he saw the appearance of male, and I basically cop blocked him and said, no, you can't hit on these girls. There might have been a sense of jealousy that, hey, I have four females that are really, really, really attractive around me, and now he's trying to holler at them, and I won't let them near him. So that might be a superficial, like, surface factor. Right. But once I spoke up, now, you know, I'm slowly into my, like, transition, and I explained before that, like, I had some complications with my hormone therapy, so my voice will tend to be a little higher than most. Mm-hmm. So sometimes in the community, people see male and they assume that I'm gay.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that came across when I spoke up, that because I was a little heated, so my voice, when most humans, when they get heated or excited, their voice tends to rise.
I know all about that.
So when I probably spoke to him, my voice was higher, and he said, okay, so now this queer kid is yelling at me, and I'm not going to be about that. And I don't know what his moral compass is. I don't know if, you know, he has his opinions in life, and if that's what I felt like right then and there when I spoke up and he said the word faggot is when he had to discriminate towards me.
Right. But see, I think that what's important is the fact that it's not like you came out and said, you know, I'm gay or I'm trans or whatever, right? Whatever clues he got about you were based on his perception of what normally is assumed of either a male or a female. And first of all, that whole binary baloney. But
right.
Also that you weren't fitting into it. Right, because you said that he said something about, I can't tell whether you're a male or a female, you're a shim, right?
Correct, absolutely.
So, and this is getting to what we were talking about earlier, that some of these reasons why splitting off trans people from the LGB community is so difficult is because of the fact that, you know, it's not like the person who was assaulting you drew a distinction, right? They were calling you both a shim, which is, you know, possibly he's got some weird perception of what trans people are, but also was calling you faggot, which is generally a gay, you know, slur, not a trans slur. And so it's almost like in certain times we are inextricably linked. And so I'm very glad, first of all, that you felt comfortable enough to come onto the show and share your experience. What I would like to know is, I know that this past week was basically the wrapping up of the court case from this assault last year. So can you tell our listeners basically, you know, what was the resulting decision? Do you feel like justice was served, or did someone drop the ball? Like, what was basically the resolution of all this?
Well, actually, it's quite interesting because the whole premise of the charge was assault with biased intent on my part. And then the second charge was assault on Veronica, which was the female who was trying to protect me.
Okay.
Basically, the outcome was that he was found guilty on both counts. However, he was not guilty on biased intent. So basically, he pleaded not guilty. The jury decided that, yes, he did attack me, but he didn't do it with prejudice, and they found that not guilty. Mind you, that I had four witness testimonies with pretty much the same storyline. He had no witnesses. He didn't even testify himself. I had three police officers also testify on my behalf, and constantly the words faggot, shim, what are you, boy or girl, blah, 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 were stated in testimony.
Yeah.
And he had said all those things across the street, opposite side of the sidewalk, before he even got to me, before he even laid a punch on me.
Yeah.
So for the jury to say that it was not guilty on biased, I felt that my heart fell. Like, I was so upset about that. because I felt the whole time was the reason why he attacked me was because there was a prejudice against, intent behind it.
Right.
But unfortunately, that's how our judicial system works here. So, and I, you know, the judgment of our peers. But he was found guilty on 2 counts of assault, and he ended up getting, well, with my recommendation. He was 21. He was going to school. He does have 2 prior charges of DUI, so there was an alcohol-based issue with him, alcohol issues with him. So it was my recommendation that he would serve, you know, a probationary period, up to a maximum jail time of 6 months, with alcohol treatment, substance abuse treatment, anger management, community service, and suspended driving privileges. But everything that I explained to the judge, she took into account. She did give him everything that I had just stated, and she basically laid into him in the courtroom, and so that he has no right to, regardless of his opinion in life or his, you know, to go down the street and catcall women, to justify women like that to be sexist, and based on someone's appearance, and she said it, based on someone's appearance, to sit there and call them a faggot or queer or whatever he decided to use that day. Yeah. So I felt like the verdict and everything was justified for the case presented.
Right. So do you feel like that the judge kind of got it, maybe even possibly more than the jury did?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I was, you know, one of the biggest things that my lawyers advised is that I had to go up there and explain transgender and what it meant and how I identified as it, and basically so that the juries understood exactly what that meant. And that's one of the big things is about education, because it's one of the few things that a lot of people don't even know, even in our own community. And I think Percy mentioned that a lot of people in our own community don't even understand the definition of trans.
Right. Exactly. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story. I really appreciate it. I know that this is still kind of fresh, given the fact that it was just yesterday, wasn't it, that the case was closed? So I really want to thank you for that. I can't imagine that whole week has been very easy for you. So I really do appreciate you know, giving some of your time.
Thank you for allowing me to share.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you would like to quickly share for our listeners before we kind of start to wrap up?
No, I'm good.
Cool. So again, Christian, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Percy, you have obviously been working on quite a number of things lately, and obviously I want to thank you for everything that you've kind of, all of the insight and time that you've given us tonight as well. Do you want to plug any of the organizations or anything that's coming up kind of in your world?
So I'm part of GCAS. So it would be great if, you know, anyone that, you know, identifies as transmasculine or, you know, is a friend or a relative of someone or, just wants to, you know, learn more about trans people, they can either get a hold of me or they can go on the DCATS Facebook page. For trans guys, there is a group. We meet every Sunday. Every month, so the second Sunday of every month, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Whitman Walker. That's the one on 14th and R Street in Washington, D.C. And also for Casa Ruby, we have volunteer days, and they happen pretty much every Saturday from 1 to 5 p.m., and we will be having a volunteer day this Saturday. So you can get a hold of me. I'm on Facebook, or you can check on the Casa Ruby webpage for more info.
Awesome. Well, so before we obviously get to our last word, which for those listeners that aren't aware, I try to always give at least one of my guests the last word for the night, and that'll be Percy tonight. But before we get there, so Percy, think about what you'd like to share. Before we get there, I'd like to not only thank again our guests, but I also want to thank two people that are huge in the trans community that really have written some amazing things about this discussion. If you would like more information or to read more about it, the New York Times a couple of years ago hosted basically like a little series called Room for Debate, and it was about this, the T in LGBT, and both Teek Milan from GLAAD and Laverne Cox, who needs no introduction, both wrote amazing pieces. And, you know, in talking tonight, you will, if you go back and read those two pieces, as well as the other four, because there were six debaters, you'll notice that some of the things that we talk about are mentioned in some of these articles. And I've found them very informative. The other thing is that next week, there's an event that I'm going to be part of. So last month, Women Healing Women in Atlanta, Georgia, presented Masculinity Misunderstood in partnership with Unity Fellowship Church of Greater Atlanta. This community conversation about the effects of misogyny and hypermasculinity in the LGBTQ community was deeply moving. We had a phenomenal turnout, and we knew we needed to continue the conversation. So on April 30th, 1 week from today, Women Healing Women's Executive Director Amani Evans will host a call-in event with special guests Dr. Danny L. Harris, Dr. Kofi Adoma, and myself. And this call-in event is open to the public, so you don't want to miss this show. We encourage you to call in with your questions. So grab a pen and write this down. The phone number to listen is 712-775-7085, and the access code is 103101. Again, that's 712-775-7085, and the access code is 103101. So call in with your questions. It's a community event. Mark your calendars for Thursday, April 8th, starting at 8 p.m., and that will be a panel with myself and the other two illustrious guests that I mentioned previously. So, Percy, it is to you, my friend. You have the last word. So what would you like to leave with our listeners? It can be anything you want. So share your infinite wisdom with our listeners with your last word.
All right, so I'm really grateful to, you know, be able to be here today, and, you know, I'm just really hoping that the LGBT community can come together and we can all fight with and for each other and just get greater inclusion for trans people and, you know, just get, you know, more access to jobs and greater protections under the law for, you know, everyone. Oh, yep.
Awesome. Thank you both so much, Christian and Percy, for joining us. Really appreciate this. Next month, we will have another wonderful topic for you. So join us again every fourth Thursday, The Strong Stance on the Back to Us Radio Network. For those of you that have not liked The Strong Stance page on Facebook, please go do that. It's on Facebook, The Strong Stance. Thanks again for joining us, both to our guests and our listeners. I will see you again next month.
Who have I become? Who have I become? Who have I become?
Who have I become? Who have I become? Who have I become?
Tight midnight, weighed up by the lamplight like a housewife. Can't sleep, can't sing, staring at the phone, still it won't ring, won't ring.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having four number one albums, 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 7 Grammy Awards, 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism, 1 in 68. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.